and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
This is Nicholas from Presence of God Ministry. Are you a believer that is looking for a way to understand Bible prophecy as it pertains to historic as well as current events? Do you believe a one-world government is predicted in the Bible to occur in our day? Do you want to know what the Bible says about the Vatican's role in all of this? Are you one that believes no prophecy of the Bible is of any personal interpretation, as 2 Peter 1:20 declares? And are you also one that understands all the symbols in prophecy are defined accurately in all the books of the Bible? If so, then you are one that would be blessed by the Truth Provided broadcast. Please join us on Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for an adventure in Bible prophecy. See the prophecies of old come to light in today's current events as well as historic events in our not-so-distant past. You will find information in this broadcast that will benefit you and your family like never before. So please stop by Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on FirstAmendmentRadio.com for the Truth Provided broadcast. For more information, stop by our website at www.remnantofgod.org.
Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Welcome to another, the closing edition of American Exposé at 9 o'clock Central Time on Tuesday evening, the 21st of June, listeners. The mess continues to divulge itself. The continuing direction to control maneuvers itself. I keep coming back to State Department Publication 7277 from 1961, listeners. The plan in place from 1961. Freedom from war, the United States program for general and complete disarmament in a peaceful world. Who's going to be in control of that, people? I see here, biometrics ID system debuts in Orlando International Airport. Remember, the Biometric Consortium listeners on our website, the Biometric Consortium listeners. According to the Associated Press, Bridget Gorsh placed her hand on a screen that copied her fingerprints. And she then stood in front of an ATM-like machine that captured an image of her eyes' iris. A private company hopes as many as 30,000 other people this year will follow the lead of the security chief of Orlando International Airport by offering up their biometric information for a program guaranteeing travelers an exclusive security line. And the promise of no random secondary pat-downs in exchange for a background check by the Department of Homeland Security. The privately run program debuted Tuesday at Orlando, the first and so far only airport that is trying it out. And there's the point. The intrusion in private property, the intrusion into the private body by these airport screeners has prompted people to accept this totalitarian direction of controlling by knowing who you are, wherever you are, in this day and time. The plan is being engineered from the past to the present, and everything's just following along lockstep into this direction. From the State Department, their publication, 7277 Freedom from War, Blueprint for the Peace Race, followed that, which was the outline of that document, State Department publication 7277. It is the bottom line. It is the research that has brought me to this conclusion. There is no other way around it. When you do the research, when you connect the dots, when you see what's being engineered and you understand what happened in the past to bring us to this point, you know what's going to happen in the future. Those that disagree with the United Nations totalitarian agenda being engineered by the U.S. mission to the United Nations by the State Department will be dealt with. Unless enough people on the inside and outside get active to stop it. The only way sovereignty can be regained in the world, in the entire planet, the only way sovereignty can be regained comes from this country. The American people in this country coming together to understand what's going on. In other words, this broadcast that I do needs to be disseminated and distributed throughout the country. You need to get CDs of this broadcast. Every show I do, you need to get copied and spread them far and wide. Make copies and spread them as far as you can. This article continues from the Associated Press. The privately run program debuted Tuesday in Orlando, the first and so far only airport that is trying it out. Hold on, people. On a rare occasion, my animals seem to get active, and we must have company, and that could very well be the case. So, according to this information, those passengers who will pay $80 a year to join the Traveler Pilot Program, called CLEAR, register by computer either at home or at the airport and give their biometric data at an airport kiosk resembling an oversized ATM machine. K-I-O-S-K is the spelling of that word. The information is then submitted to the Transportation Security Administration, and that came from Homeland Security listeners. If the passengers are approved, they get a baby blue translucent card that holds a computer chip containing their fingerprints and iris image for quick identity verification. They also earn the right to go through a separate, quicker security lane as soon as July, although they still will need to pass shoeless. They will still need to pass shoeless through an airport metal detector. You've got to be joking, listeners. Quote, they will still have to go through a security screening, but they won't have to stand in the line that you may encounter when you go to the airport, end quote, Gorsh said. Quote, it will be an expedited process, end quote. The program will be run by Verified Identity Pass Incorporated, a company founded by Stephen Brill, whose previous venture includes starting the publications of the American Lawyer and Brill's content. And that is the way it is, listeners. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm back, and I did have company and some things to be straightened out here, helping me with my injured knee. My friend Jack was here, and so I had to work some directions out with him. But the idea of all this, listeners, this ID system, this situation at Orlando International Airport, will be going on all over the country. It's being maneuvered and manipulated as we speak. This is the point. The Biometric Consortium is on the website. Biometric Consortium tells you exactly what's being engineered. And I have their readouts here from the past. I've printed out some information from the past, and I think I can find it. If not, I'm going to be disappointed, and I guess I'm going to be disappointed. Nope, here it is. Listeners, I printed this out quite a while ago. January 24th of 2000 is when we first put it on the website, I believe. The Biometric Consortium serves as the U.S. government's focal point for research, development, test, evaluation, and application of biometric-based personal identification verification technology. And this is probably one of the only websites that it's on. And it's very, very amazing that we connect all these dots so easily and others don't. They state that the information age is quickly revolutionizing the way transactions are completed. Everyday actions are increasingly being handled electronically instead of with pencil and paper or face-to-face. This growth in electronic transactions has resulted in a greater demand for fast and accurate user identification and authentication. Authentication. Biometric technology is a way to achieve fast, user-friendly authentication with a high level of accuracy. And there it is. Being implemented at Addison on us today. The maneuvering is well in place. And they state this presentation will highlight some of the benefits of using biometrics for authentication. Emerging applications, both within the government and industry, will be discussed. Also present will be an overview of the U.S. Government Biometric Consortium and how this group is bringing together technologists from government and industry to work together on improved standards. What are their improved standards about? Identification. A plan in place. Biometrics are automated methods of recognizing a person based on a physical or behavioral characteristic. Examples of human traits used for biometric recognition include fingerprints, speech, face, retina, iris, handwritten signature, hand geometry, and wrist veins. Absolutely amazing, listeners. Once again, examples of human traits used for biometric recognition include fingerprints, speech, face, retina, iris, handwritten signature, hand geometry, and wrist veins. Biometric recognition can be used in identification mode, where the biometric system identifies a person from the entire enrolled population by searching a database for a match. A system also can be used in verification mode, where the biometric system authenticates a person's claimed identity from his or her previously enrolled pattern. using biometrics for identifying and authenticating human beings offers some unique advantages. Only biometric authentication bases and identification on an intrinsic part of a human being. Tokens such as smart cards, magnetic stripe cards, physical keys, and so forth can be lost, stolen, duplicated, or left at home. And there's the catch. Passwords can be forgotten, shared, or observed. While all biometric systems have their own advantages and disadvantages, there are some common characteristics needed to make a biometric system usable. First, the biometric must be based upon a distinguishable trait. For example, for nearly a century, law enforcement has used fingerprints to identify people. There is a great deal of scientific data supporting the idea that, quote, no two fingerprints are alike, end quote. Newer methods, even those with a great deal of scientific support, such as the DNA-based genetic matching, sometimes do not hold up in court. Anyway, there's much of this going on. As I move along in another section, there are many examples of biometrics being used or considered in federal, state, local, and foreign government projects. One used to provide robust authentication for access to computer systems containing sensitive information used by the military services, intelligence agencies, and other security-critical federal organizations. Physical access control to restricted areas is another key application. Get this, there are many law enforcement applications, mostly for fingerprint recognition, at the federal, state, and local levels. Other law enforcement applications include home incarceration and physical access control in jails and prisons. Perhaps one of the most extensive applications of biometrics is for entitlements. Fraud in entitlement programs is estimated by the General Accounting Office at over $10 billion per year. Pilot programs in several states have demonstrated dramatic savings by requiring biometric authentication when someone is applying for entitlement benefits. Current applications, Immigration and Naturalization Service, Passenger Accelerated Service System, INSPASS. PortsPass is another INS initiative similar to INSPASS, except that people and vehicles at borders are being monitored, and it uses a voice recognition biometric instead of hand geometry. PortPass is used at a U.S.-Canadian vehicle border crossing and is planned for use at U.S.-Mexican border crossings. One version of PortPass, the automated permit port, requires the vehicle to stop. It will also have a video inspection service allowing a driver to conference with an inspector should the biometric fail. What if the driver's politically incorrect, listeners? There's so much to biometrics that I've covered in the past, and here we are seeing it unveiled right in front of our noses. All I'm trying to say is that all this was planned a long time ago. Homeland Security was planned a long time ago. The only way for Homeland Security to be implemented was to create a Pearl Harbor-like event at the World Trade Center. Those buildings were imploded, in my opinion. There's no other way it could have happened. And that is the sad commentary to have. Very, very sad. The draconian directions in place today are totally in your face. Now, we've talked about the Global Fire Monitoring Center. And I think I'm the one that found the Global Fire Monitoring Center. I don't think anyone else found it. An agency from the United Nations that monitors all the fires in the world. How can that be? Why would they want to do that? Well, could it be that fires are being used to get people off certain portions of land and to relocate them in sustainable communities? As Darren documented, as I said before, on his broadcast last night, that sustainable communities are being built in the tsunami-ravaged area of Asia. Well, we see the federal wildland fire policy, and we see that the wildland urban interface is defined as the line, area, or zone where structures and other human development meet and in or intermingle with undeveloped wildland or vegetative fuels. It is synonymous with the term intermix. In reviewing current conditions, it is evident that the wildland slash urban interface fire protection and prevention is not a new problem, nor are the recommended solutions newly conceived. Many of the reports and recommendations generated in the aftermath of the wildfires that destroyed homes in very similar in content and substance. For example, documents created as early as 1960 and through the 1970s and 80s all contain the single goals, and that's, quote, create a uniform hazard rating system, end quote, or, quote, wildland fuels must be managed near structures, end quote. The problem is finding new solutions to an old problem, but of implementing known solutions. How does it fit into the whole situation? Well, if the UN monitors all the fires in the globe, could it be that fires are being set off to move populations? This is the point. Under the current status, it says, interface. The interface has become a major fire problem, which will escalate as the nation moves into the 21st century. People continue to move from urban areas to rural areas. These new wildland slash urban immigrants give little thought to the wildfire hazard and bring with them their expectations for a continuation of urban emergency services. The National Fire Protection Association, the NFPA, estimates that since 1985, wildfire destroyed more than 9,000 homes and resulted in the deaths of many firefighters and private citizens. In 1994, an estimated $250 to $300 million of federal wildland fire suppression dollars were spent in protecting the wildland-urban interface. Since fiscal year 1970, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, has provided approximately $64 million in fire suppression assistance grants to states for the suppression of fires on publicly or privately owned forests or grasslands that have threatened destruction that would constitute a major disaster. My whole point about bringing this up and adding it on the site is the fact that more and more totalitarian control is coming into place in all facets of life. The management of land is being engineered. The Bureau of Land Management manages land. There's groups in the BLM or part of their system that go out to wilderness areas and take down any kind of sign of human habitat from the past, old buildings, things like this, to restore it to pre-Columbus days. And this is being done. We're not hearing much about it, but it's all under the guise of jobs, jobs, jobs. And you understand this is going on. You understand the manipulative process in place. You realize wars are created to create refugees, and this is done on a constant basis now. They talk about hazard and risk assessment process. Without a consistent process that assesses wildland urban interface hazard and risk values and loss experience, it is difficult to prescribe appropriate mitigation measures. State and local communities perceive determination of hazard and risk, as well as regulation in response to these issues, as a local prerogative. Further, that regulation through ordinances is also determined by local governments, which is good. But where's the funding coming from? And what is the plan ultimately when people don't have the clue of what's being directed and manipulated? This is a big problem. And FEMA's interjection into all this, Federal Emergency Management Agency. Create the crisis, the Hegelian dialectic. It says, in support of others, the role of FEMA in the wildland-urban interface is to encourage comprehensive disaster preparedness plans and programs, increase the capability of state and local governments, and provide for a greater understanding of FEMA's programs at the federal, state, and local levels. FEMA provides fire suppression assistance to the states in response to fires on public or private land and threaten to become a major disaster, encourages the development and implementation of viable multi-hazard mitigation measures, and provides training to clarify FEMA's programs. What is FEMA ultimately about? Federal Emergency Management Agency, which can control all facets of our communication, our transportation, in the event of a national disaster. The manipulative process has not been shown yet with FEMA. But keep in mind, our military, for all intents and purposes, is out of our country. The enrollment into the military, the recruiting into the military is down, and you can understand why. The USDA Forest Service Invasive Species Program is a portal to Forest Service invasive species information and related management and research activities across the agency and with their many partners. The goal of the USDA Forest Service Invasive Species Program is to reduce, minimize, or eliminate the potential for introduction, establishment, spread, and impact of invasive species across all landscapes and ownerships. The Invasive Species Program integrates many divisions of the agency. The USDA Forest Service people. Invasive species. What is an invasive species? A species is considered invasive if it meets these two criteria. One, it is non-native to the ecosystem under consideration. And two, its introduction causes or is likely to cause economic or environmental harm or harm to human health. This definition is derived from Executive Order 13112, issued February 3, 1999. Executive Order Dictatorship is what we live under today. The executive orders are listed on the website now on the front page. President George Walker Bush said, "I make the decisions, not you." And that's what we live under today, an executive order dictatorship. So this executive order 13112, February 3rd, 1999, by the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, including the National Environmental Policy Act of 1969, is amended. And certainly, you learn about alien species and the definitions means with respect to a particular ecosystem, any species including its seeds, eggs, spores, or other biological material capable of propagating that species that is not native to the ecosystem. B, control means as appropriate in eradicating, suppressing, reducing, or managing invasive species populations, preventing spread of invasive species from areas where they are present, and taking steps such as restoration of native species and habitats to reduce the effects of invasive species and to prevent further invasions. What a great situation to distract us with the real problems in place. Native species, invasive species, endangered species. And who is the ultimate endangered species? Well, they want to reduce the population. They, meaning those in the UN system, those in powers of prominence, those members of the Bilderberg Organization, Trilateral Commission, members of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Federal Reserve System, I don't want to take it any further than that, because all I'm here to do is increase our numbers. With the increase of numbers, what are we bringing on? I'm afraid to disclose that. But what hope do we have but to increase our numbers, listeners? That is the only hope to have at this point in time, is to increase our numbers. Very important to keep that in mind. Be back to continue the broadcast. Stay with me.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
If you read the history books, the most often asked questions of Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War and the Right of Succession from the Old Pass Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free, or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
What do you know about the FTAA, the proposed free trade area of the Americas? Proponents tell us that the FTAA is merely about lowering trade barriers. They say it's a plan to create prosperity and enhance freedom throughout the Western Hemisphere, and that busy Americans don't need to be concerned about it. But they aren't telling us about the massive loans, bribes, and transfers of authority. They aren't telling us that their goal is to eliminate our independence by creating a new regional government. They aren't telling us that the FTAA is really part of a huge power grab. The proponents simply aren't proclaiming their true intentions. But you can learn what they are. Visit StopTheFTAA.org. Then tell Congress to reject any plan for the free trade area of the Americas. That's StopTheFTAA.org.
Continue with these directions, and certainly the mess in place in the Middle East is an extension of Vietnam to communize that part of the world, in my thoughts. We see law-abiding Iraqis caught up in U.S. effort to stamp out insurgency. What is insurgency in the first place? Who's supplying the weaponry to the insurgents? Hansa Molina will be on with me again tomorrow, which will, once again, a Czechoslovakian defector, who's seeing the writing on the wall here that happened in his country. So, in Iraq, insurgency, anyone might be the enemy. Isn't that what I've been saying all these months? Anyone could be the enemy because you don't know who the enemy is? So, with weapons drawn, a dozen U.S. soldiers charged down the ramps of their armored Stryker vehicles, roughly yanked three Iraqi students out of a car by their necks, and shoved their faces into a nearby wall. Quote, what's your name? Where are you going? Don't lie to me, end quote. Lieutenant Colonel Eric Carrilla shouted at the first teenager. How do they know they even speak English? Well, quote, to my house to study, end quote, the trembling young man answered. I have exams next week. Carrillo questioned each of the young men separately, twisting their shirt collars around their throats throughout each interrogation. But the students soon were deemed harmless. Everyone had a current university ID and told the same story. As abruptly as they had appeared, the soldiers from the Army's 1st Battalion of the 42nd Infantry Regiment got back into their strikers to leave. As the ramps clanked shut, the wide-eyed young students stood on the sidewalk. Their vehicles stopped in the middle of the street, blocking carloads of gawking Iraqis in both directions. On the receiving end of the U.S. military's increasingly aggressive patrol posture are many apparently law-abiding Iraqis. The college students in Mosul getting shoved face first into a wall. The retired English teacher in Bajli, thrilled to practice his language skills on U.S. soldiers until they barge into his home and search under his beds. The homemaker in Tikrit, who begged soldiers with words they don't understand to take off their muddy boots before walking across her carefully maintained pastel carpets. Many Iraqis complain that their interactions with Americans are frustrating and sometimes downright degrading experiences, that searches feel arbitrary and civil rights have become secondary. During dozens of raids and patrols in various hot spots in northern Iraq and the volatile region known as the Sunni Triangle over the last 2 weeks, one result was clear. For every insurgent killed or captured, far more Iraqis are searched, questioned, inconvenienced, manhandled, and detained, and later released. Some Iraqis take the treatment better than others. One beaming woman politely told soldiers her house had been searched 4 times since February, even as her sobbing children huddled around her in fear. One man offered an entire squad of soldiers cold Pepsi after they had messingly rummaged through his home, but others were furious and glare at the young soldiers, telling them that Americans are the real terrorists because of the way they storm through civilian homes without cause. And this is what I've told you all along, people. You go to the Middle East, you go overseas, you go to Vietnam, you go to Korea, you do not know who your enemy is, and this is what you have. But what are our military doing over there? We're the military for the UN system. Whenever we leave, the UN system stays. Bosnia-Herzegovina, the UN system stays, which used to be Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia has been divided up into 3 different countries. As I talked to Hansa, I think that was because they wanted to destroy the sovereignty of Yugoslavia. And this is the bottom line. There's so much to this article, and it's very, very revealing, and it's vindicating anything I've ever said in the past. It's just giving credibility to what I've said. Law-abiding Iraqis caught up in U.S. effort to stamp out insurgency. There it is, number 6 on Monday's date, yesterday. How can we make a difference? How can we stop this? How is it going to be maneuvered to the point where we can regain a constitutional republic? Only with the sheer amount of numbers. Only with the sheer amount of numbers outnumbering those on the inside, which we do already. It's just the ignorance that has been engineered for so long is well underway. Very, very important to keep this in mind, listeners, as we have the environmental movement, the Agenda 21, Agenda 21 is mandated in every UN country, all over the world. It's mandated. It's the bottom line. It's a sad commentary to have, but it's just the way it is. And keep in mind that with the engineering of Agenda 21, countries have to be brought into servitude positions. They have to be brought into controlled and manipulative situations. Without that, we don't have much. From Tim Pope, in Oklahoma, Tim Pope, President, Oklahoma Republican Assembly, he says, as I have grown older and hopefully wiser. I've become more aware of the need to watch out for those who would take away our freedom to buy the type of food and the healthier that we as consumers really want. Right here in Oklahoma, we are battling to make sure that we can buy organic chickens from the farmer and whole raw milk from the dairy. I'm not sure we are winning that battle. As you know, I, Tim Pope, forward very little information on to you, but I believe so strongly in our need to understand the move by big pharmaceutical companies and big food giants and the need to fight for our freedoms, and I'm sending you this article. I am currently working on getting Carolyn Dean and one of her affiliates to come and speak at the OKRA about what is going on behind the scenes. That's the Oklahoma Republican Assembly. You will never see me start pointing out black helicopters and looking for FBI agents snooping around my file box, but I'm asking you to please read this article. The future of your ability to buy vitamin C without a prescription is at stake. Don't laugh. There are places in Europe where you have to have a doctor's permission to buy vitamins and minerals. And this is the point that I've been talking about for months, as others have, a handful of others. The U.S. delegation of Codex has just issued a formal written statement to the Codex Alimentarius Commission that the United States, during the July 4th through the 9th, 2005 meeting in Rome, will support compulsory rules created by this international organization directly overruling U.S. law regarding access to vitamins. The U.S. law that is about to be vanquished is the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act of 1994. Codex is a joint venture between the United Nations World Health Organization and Food and Agriculture Organization. That's the WHO, WHO/FAO. And the World Trade Organization, the WTO, has already stated that it will enforce Codex guidelines as the world standard for trade in dietary supplements. This will mean that gradually, pill by pill, our access to the dietary supplements we depend on will disappear. For those not familiar with the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act of 1994, it was passed because 2.5 million ordinary citizens wanted to make sure dietary supplements such as herbs, vitamins, minerals, and other food-based supplements could stay on the over-the-counter market. Movement to create this law, known as DSHEA, started when a 1992 FDA task force published a report announcing the FDA's desire to remove these products from the shelves as they represented a, quote, a disincentive for patented drug research, end quote. Immediately following this announcement, millions of Americans learned about how famed vitamin doctor Jonathan Wright's patent-filled medical office was raided the same month by nearly two dozen gun-toting, flak-jacketed FDA agents in the name of regulating supplements. Battering down an unlocked office door, these agents, backed by burly Sheriff's Department deputies, lined up staff and patients against the wall, pulled IVs from patients' arms in the middle of treatments, confiscated patient records, took the hard drive from the office computer, all because Dr. Jonathan Wright was using nutritional supplements to heal very sick people who could not get help from standard allopathic medical care. As the story developed, it turned out that this Gestapo-style raid was standard operating procedure for the FDA. And as the general public became aware of just how many doctors' offices, manufacturing companies, distributors, and health food stores had been assaulted by similar raids, the horror of all this forged a mighty health freedom army that resulted in unanimous passage of the DSHEA. The idea of the law was twofold. One, DSHEA was to make a clear distinction between food, which is considered generally safe, and did not need to have permission from the FDA to be allowed on the market, and drugs which were generally toxic, potentially deadly, and need of lengthy evaluation before they were available to the public under prescription from a doctor. DSHEA provides the FDA with plenty of legal authority to remove herbs or dietary supplements from the market, providing the agency has plenty of real evidence of real harm to the public. The FDA also has the authority to limit the amount of a supplement to low levels if the agency has plenty of real evidence to prove higher levels are actually dangerous. The FDA and its big pharma backers have never liked DSHEA because these products and the resulting natural healing arts services often related of them are putting the allopathic drug, surgical, chemical, medical industry to shame. In his book, Death by Modern Medicine, using the allopathic medical industry's own official reports, he documents how 784,000 people die every year in the American medical system while following doctors' orders in a highly regulated allopathic system. The proof that dietary supplements and the practitioners who promote them are safe and work as expected is evidence everywhere. Studies conducted all over the world have shown that supplements are actually safer than food, and there is simply no hard evidence to show that there is any risk factor worthy of discussion, much less needing universal risk assessment. Yet the U.S. delegation, along with its big pharma backers, are bound and determined that Codex force risk analysis assessments upon the American dietary supplement industry so they can bypass the expressed will of the American people. The real reason for promotion of risk assessment is based on two agendas. First, to be able to strip the over-the-counter marketplace of everything but low-quality, low-dose-level products that won't do much to support improved health. Second, to set up the framework to allow Big Pharma to take over the supplement market as a new form of drugs where prices can be jacked up outrageously and doled out by doctors for a fee. Understand this. If you do not act now, you and everyone you love will be condemned to living under an international law that denies your basic right to maintain your health. Without health, you have no freedom. Carolyn Dean is a medical doctor, neuropathic doctor, herbalist, acupuncturist, nutritionist, as well as a powerful health activist fighting for health freedom as president of Friends of Freedom International. Dr. Carolyn Dean is the author of over a dozen health books, the latest of which is Death by Modern Medicine. And you can go to www.deathbymodernmedicine.com. And you can also go to www.friends, friendsoffreedominternational.org. I'll get this up on the website with Dennis's support and help, hopefully. The position and problem is very, very apparent. The totalitarian agenda is obvious if you do research. Most don't. Most aren't paying attention. And this is the problem, listeners. Most aren't paying attention. Most don't understand what's going on. And that is my concern at this juncture. My extreme concern is in place. Back to the Middle East mess. Here we see, from the Herald Leader, the president of Gold Star Families for Peace, a mother who lost a son in Iraq, criticized the United States' illegal and unjust war during an interfaith rally in Lexington. Cindy Sheehan of Vacaville, California, accused President Bush of lying to the nation about a war which was or has consumed tens of billions of dollars and claimed more than 1,700 American lives, including the life of Army Specialist Casey Austin Sheehan. This is just another Vietnam, listeners. There's nothing that I can say for or against it. It's another Vietnam. It's terrible. It's a disaster. But keep in mind, the Communist Party USA is saying the same thing we are. That's how they lure you in. As I did cover this last week, the best support for the troops is to bring them home. Coming from the Communist Party USA. Since the start of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, the Bush administration and its supporters in the media have been working overtime perpetuating the old myth that protesting a war is unpatriotic and against our troops whose lives are on the line. Nothing could be further from the truth. The U.S. people have a patriotic duty to object to the rogue nation policies of George W. Bush and his Republican guards. That comes from the Communist Party USA. Is that any different than what you and I think at this point in time? Is that any different from what this Cindy Sheehan of Vacaville, California feels? There's the point that lures you in. Sheehan was one of more than a dozen activists who were scheduled to speak at yesterday's anti-war rally in Red Mile, which was organized by the clergy and Laity Network and co-sponsored by dozens of liberal religious organizations. And what else is new? And this is the problem. This is a mess in place. This is what we're in the middle of. Here we see from U.S. Today, November 10th, 2001. U.S. Combat Commander in Afghanistan said Thursday that apprehending Osama bin Laden isn't one of the missions of Operation Enduring Storm. But General Tommy Frank's remarks may come back to haunt him Friday morning when he meets with President Bush to brief him on the war's progress. Bush has said from the beginning of the operation that he wants bin Laden dead or alive. Quote, we have not said that Osama bin Laden is a target of this effort, end quote, Franks told reporters at his first Pentagon briefing since the war began a month ago. Usually Franks, the commander-in-chief of the Central Command and third in the war's chain of command after Bush and Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, is headquartered in Tampa. Quote, what we are about, he said, is the destruction of the Al-Qaeda network as well as Taliban that provide harbor to bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, end quote. Where are the weapons coming from for the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda and the Mujahideen, which used to be the freedom fighters for Afghanistan, fighting the Soviets? Keep in mind that in Cold Blood, the book by Abdul Shams stated in there that we, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, built the roads east to west to Afghanistan. The Soviets built the roads north to south to and in Afghanistan. And most of those roads were made with concrete. Concrete holds up better under the treads of tanks. So, this manipulative process is well underway. I'm so sorry to give you this information. I'm so sorry to have to be doing this. But as you learn, as you learn more and more about what's being maneuvered on us, you become more and more concerned. You won't send your sons and daughters into the military any longer because you know what the military is. It's the global cop for the UN system being maneuvered for implementation on a constant basis for the UN system. Freedom from war is the UN system. And the International Organization for Migration, an agency offshoot of the United Nations system, as migration is being done all over the world, migrate from one country to the next so people can communicate. People have no patriotism. People have no stout belief in sovereignty. This is what the International Organization for Migration, managing migration for the benefit of all, is what they say. And it is on the website AmericanExpose.com. It's very, very important that you understand what this is all about. because without your knowledge, we can't use you to wake up other people in this country to make a difference, to stop it. You that have the families are the ones that are going to suffer the most. IOM is committed to the principle that humans or humane and orderly migration benefits migrants and society. Keep in mind the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Keep in mind implementation of Human Rights Treaty, Executive Order 13107, December 10, 1998. As the leading international organization for migration, IOM acts with its partners in the international community to assist in meeting the growing operational challenges of migration management, advance understanding of migration issues, encourage social and economic development through migration, and uphold the human dignity and well-being of migrants. We call it illegal immigration in America, but it's actually migration under the human rights treaties. And there is the problem. There's where the problem lies. What does IOM do? After a half century of worldwide operational experience, IOM has become the leading international organization working with migrants and governments to provide humane responses to migration challenges. Fits in totally with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, people. Established in 1951 as an intergovernmental organization to resettle European displaced persons, refugees and migrants, IOM has now grown to encompass a variety of migration management activities throughout the world. The offices and operations on every continent, IOM helps governments and civil society through rapid humanitarian responses to sudden migration flows. What causes that? Wars and natural disasters, or weather modification and environmental modification. Post-emergent return and reintegration programs, assistance to migrants on their way to new homes and lives. While not part of the United Nations system, IOM maintains close working relations with UN bodies. Get that? While not part of the United Nations system, IOM maintains close working relations with UN bodies and operational agencies. What does that mean IOM is? A non-governmental organization. IOM has as partners a wide range of international and non-governmental organizations. There it is. Quote, migration will be one of the major policy concerns of the 21st century. In our shrinking world, more and more people will look to migration, temporary or permanent, as a path to employment, education, freedom, or other opportunities. And once again, listeners, what did I say before? The negotiating group on the